Back together, you and I, on a steamy hot Thursday, July 15th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. Dr. Gary Rose checked in with us, the chairman of the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, looking at state government and national government, all things political with Gary. Jim Cameron, who writes the Getting There column for Hearst Connecticut Media, also checked in with us in the 4 o'clock hour. Jim talking about, well, some discrepancies, apparently, from what Metro North and the MTA is saying about COVID masks on trains and what they're actually doing. And I had a few thoughts earlier in the show about what appears to be another case of juvenile crime hitting a major Connecticut city, a Democrat mayor, a former police chief in that city, saying enough's enough. Hey, you folks in Waterbury, thanks for listening, by the way. We appreciate it. Looks like Waterbury has a juvenile problem as well. So we had that thing that went on in New Britain a couple of weeks ago. Now the juvenile crazies are out in Waterbury. This from the Waterbury Republican-American earlier today. You folks in Waterbury, how about this? You folks in Waterbury, it's time to get on the phone or email to your state Senate members and your state House members and say, clean this up. Clean it up now. At least one quad and two dirt bikes tore up a grassy section of Liberty Park in broad daylight yesterday, according to police. The vehicles, which did not have plates, shocking, rolled up to the park from Grand Street near City Hall across from Waterbury Superior Court shortly after 1 p.m. Folks, 1 o'clock, middle of the day. You know what that is? That's juveniles flipping you the finger. These are juvenile habitual offenders flipping you the finger, saying, come after us. They left tracks in the grassy area facing the bandstand and disturbed soil and turf. A cost estimate to repair the damage not available Wednesday. Deputy Director of Public Works Mark Lombardo said crews will rake and plant new grass today. This from Mayor Neil O'Leary, quote, who would possibly think they could get away with what they're doing, O'Leary said, quote, we'll find them. But the problem is, folks, I'm telling you, listen to this now. This is from Mayor O'Leary in Waterbury, the former police chief, okay? The problem is the juveniles are not afraid and are being held and are not being held accountable for their actions. There you go. There's the second major public figure in the last few weeks. Yeah, the police chief in New Britain, and now you have the former police chief, the current mayor of Waterbury, saying the juveniles, they're not being held accountable. O'Leary called the vandalism, quote, another glaring example of why the juvenile justice system needs to be reformed. He's a Democrat, by the way. Okay, Neil O'Leary is not a right-wing Republican, you know, I guess Marty Looney can't let loose with one of his asinine comments about this. Oh, it's Republicans after the 80s and 90s of incarcerating all the black and brown people. I guess Marty won't be telling Neil O'Leary that. He said it's a glaring example of why the juvenile justice system needs to be reformed. He said kids are exhibiting outrageous conduct without fear or repercussions. O'Leary saying, quote, it's frustrating for me as the mayor, but it's even more frustrating for the police officers who deal with these incidents every day and these juveniles who laugh at them. They literally laugh at them because they know there will be no consequences. Although the ages of the operators in Wednesday's incident had not been determined, they appeared to be under the age of 18, according to surveillance footage. When police find the vehicles, O'Leary said, they will be seized. The operators will likely be charged with criminal mischief and moving violations. O'Leary joining a chorus of municipal leaders and police chiefs advocating for juvenile justice reform. So there you go. In late June, two teens ransacked a senior center before stealing a parked car and crashing it, police said. The senior center was closed for more than a week of repairs. Mayor O'Leary saying again, quote, juvenile courts aren't doing enough. He said, quote, when you don't hold young people accountable for criminal activity, you're feeding into more criminal activity. This from the mayor of Waterbury, a Democrat and a former police chief. There you go. So let's see, and I'm watching right now, this Juvenile Justice Policy Committee, which has a lot of legislators on it. We'll see what happens at the end of this meeting. We'll see what happens with this. One of two things is going to happen. There's actually going to be progress, or you might see this thing politicized and saying, well, you know, we don't want to go after the wrong kids. We want to make sure that we get the kids, you know, the help. If you start seeing things like help and marginalized and communities of color and stuff, I'd be very wary of that, because that means they're not serious about getting the bad kids off the street and getting them the help they need. See, these big city legislators and majority Democrats, they have one or two choices here, folks. Look, I'm no whiz at this, but there's one of two choices. You're either serious about doing this or you're not. You're either serious about tightening you know what up when it comes to juvenile justice in this state, or you're not. It's not hard here. And again, tightening things up does not mean that you throw every kid in jail if he steals a candy bar. I'm not saying that. But again, multiple offenders and broad daylight. I mean, they're ripping up part of the center of Waterbury yesterday, 1 o'clock in broad daylight. When my people say, you know, when the Gouillons get that big, then you got a problem, kids. Go to one of our go-to guys. We haven't chatted with him in about a month or so as to what's going on politically, nationally, and locally here in the state. We, of course, refer to Dr. Gary Rose, who chairs the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, hi, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm surviving, Gary. I get out of bed in the morning, and I can find the kitchen and the bathroom, so it's all good. You know,
I guess you're good, then. That's good to hear.
It's right. All I care, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, Gary, before we go nationally, let's go locally here. The governor, you know, since we last talked, we have gambling now in the state. We have a framework passed for recreational marijuana. He had his powers extended, though there were a few Democratic defections yesterday. So the governor, Gary, I guess, if he wants to run again, and we'll probably find out the next few months, although the rumblings are loud, he may have a lot of stuff to put up on the chalkboard there.
Yeah, he really is in an excellent shape to run for re-election. And quite frankly, it's going to be a very, difficult time, I would say, for the Republicans to take him on. That said, so far his public approval ratings have been over half, over 50%, that is. And much of it is due, of course, to his handling of the pandemic, where he gets extremely high marks. But, you know, you talk about the next election, 2022. The question is, will there be other issues that, you know, move to the forefront of in the minds of voters other than the pandemic? And if that's the case, what about, if we get into issues such as, taxes mm-hmm. and budget deficits and those problems? And those issues make the governor somewhat vulnerable, I would say. So if the election was held today, of course, he would probably win hands down, I would say. I'd be willing to predict that, I think. But I'll never predict an election this far out because obviously things can change, and they can change rapidly, too.
Yeah, and Gary, just as the national Democrats, even their operatives, are saying, hey, we have to be careful on this, you know, urban crime thing, we're kind of seeing that here, Gary. I've been talking today and yesterday, and you saw the news a couple of weeks ago with, you know, the kid, a multiple-time offender, a juvenile, gets out and, you know, hijacks or jacks an SUV and kills a jogger. We have juveniles earlier yesterday in the middle of the day on ATVs tearing up some of the town green in Waterbury. You know, it's interesting. There's almost a microcosm here, Gary, of what's going on nationally.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly haven't, you know, approached the level of violence that we see in some of the real large urban areas like Chicago and so forth. But nevertheless, crime is actually on the rise in Connecticut, in urban areas in particular. And even in suburban areas, actually, there are an awful lot of car thefts going on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, that gets back to what I was suggesting with the next gubernatorial election. What if crime moves up the ladder as a paramount issue in the minds of voters, and the pandemic, you know, recedes somewhat? That makes the governor, once again, you know, I don't want to say, you know, totally vulnerable, but nevertheless, the race then becomes much more competitive. These issues can change quickly, yes.
Sure. There was a story, Gary, in this latest edition of U.S. News Online that was interesting. One of their prognosticators put Connecticut in a category of governor's races least likely to flip. And they said there's a problem for the Republicans, one being that everybody kind of knows what Bob Stefanowski is. No criticism of that. And the second thing is they wonder, this gentleman wondered out loud, you know, is Themis Claridis, even if she runs, we don't know that, but she's clearly been out there. You see her all over now at the town committee meetings.
Absolutely.
If she runs, is she too liberal of a Republican to win the nomination at the convention?
Yeah, well, you know, when you go back to 2018, one of the reasons that Bob Stefanowski did win the party's nomination, of course, he circumvented the convention, went directly to the voters on the, you know, the petition route, and he got the nomination largely because he did move to the right and actually outflanked Tim Herbst on some issues. And that, I think you're correct on that, that a Themis Claridis, who, first of all, doesn't really have a very broad base, you know, coming out of the House of Representatives. But nevertheless, she could be perceived as simply a little too centrist, I think, for a number of the Republican primary voters. And we do know that the primary voters in the Republican Party in Connecticut are certainly to the right of center. So that could definitely not work to her advantage.
All right, Gary, hang on. We'll be right back to you. We'll talk a little national politics. Dr. Gary Rose, who chairs the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, is the guest. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And when we talk politics, one of our go-to guys, monthly check-in every month or so with Dr. Gary Rose, who chairs the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Go Pioneers. Gary back with us to talk after the break here about a little national stuff. Gary, it appears, at least at this point, on, you know, July 15th, 2021, that not being Donald Trump is still pretty much working for President Biden at this point.
Yeah, that's true. That really seems to be the defining nature of his presidency, is that he is not Donald Trump. It's very difficult, you know, to really, when you watch President Biden speak and you listen to, you know, some of the positions that he's articulating or trying to articulate, it's pretty clear that he's having difficulty, I think, communicating with the public. That said, though, his approval ratings are pretty respectable, and so much of it is due to the fact that he is just simply not, you know, not like his predecessor, and it doesn't have anything to do with his charisma, or for that matter, doesn't have much to do, I would say, with the agenda. It's just that he is really not Donald Trump. I think you're right on the money on that.
Yeah, but Gary, that you know, what shelf life do you give that? I on the show here gave it about a year. Because eventually, Gary, short of the midterms next year, he's going to have to confront some of this stuff, and his overall mark is good. You said it's a little above 50%, which is good in this country. But man, you know, but if you look at the crosstabs and, you know, any of the polling that you folks at Sacred Heart do or UConn or Quinnipiac, the border, he does not do well in, and crime. No. Again, the Democrats are worried about this.
Those are really salient issues. Yes, they are. As you say, the border and crime, and those issues will become more in the minds of voters as we get closer to the midterm election. And then after the midterm election, of course, the presidential campaign begins again. And you can be sure that the Republican Party will bring those issues to the forefront in the minds of voters. And so this honeymoon that the current president is enjoying will, I would say, be short-lived, and it will probably last, I think, for actually, it's short. You know, honeymoons are getting shorter and shorter. they really are. We are noticing that. But nevertheless, I think that as the congressional election starts to heat up, really Biden's approval ratings are going to go down. They really are.
We've seen Gary Rose in, I think there was one in Politico, there was one on The Hill, and there was one on a couple of other, CNN. Boy, there seem to be, Gary, some rhetorical knives out here from staff members or ex-staff members for Vice President Kamala Harris. I read one last night, and boy, I got to tell you, Gary, she's supposed to be the heir apparent, but there are apparently people going back to her days as California's AG who sound like they really want to get back at her.
Yeah. This whole notion of her being the heir apparent, to me, is really suspect. You know, when she ran for president initially, you know, her poll numbers among Democrats were 2%.
She was awful.
And so she got out before the first primary because she knew she had absolutely no traction. There's no indication to me that she is, you know, beloved by fellow Democrats. And I would never, you know, predict that she's going to be the Democratic nominee after Biden is done. She is not well liked among Democrats, never has been, and I really don't foresee a very successful presidential campaign on her part. I really don't, forthcoming.
Do you think, Gary? Final question. Who's in a worse condition right now with the schism in their party? I said the other day, I think we really have four parties now, traditional Republicans, traditional Democrats, and then you have the far right crowd of the Republicans, the Lauren Boberts, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Louis Gohmerts, and on the left, you've got this new wave continuing of these young Democrats who must be driving Nancy Pelosi nuts. I mean, who do you think has the more immediate problem here?
The more immediate problem, I think, has to do with the Democratic Party. They're really governing right now, and when you govern, you obviously, you know, have much more at stake, and I think the factions become more evident when you're governing. And we're certainly seeing that in the House of Representatives, as you mentioned, with Pelosi, and then you have the Squad on the other hand. And over in the Senate, too, among Democrats, there is considerable friction, too. And I'm not talking about just Joe Manchin, you know, and some of the other, and Schumer and others, but the Democrats right now are a fractured party. They really are. The Republicans, you're correct, Paul, have some issues too, but I see the Republicans, even though Trump, you know, is still going around and there are people that are peeling off from him, ideologically, the Republicans seem to be more coherent and more united compared to the Democrats. The ideological schisms, I think, are deeper within the Democratic Party.
You know, Gary, I had a couple of guests on earlier this week, and we were talking about, I guess, that old formula, Gary, of a former president pretty much saying nothing his first year out, maybe working on his library the second year, maybe in the third year, oh, here's my book. And then in the fourth year, okay, twist my arm, I'll do a couple of campaign appearances.
Yeah.
The Donald isn't, he's thrown that out the window too, hasn't he?
Yeah. I've been asked so many times if he's running again. It's hard to say no, that he's not, when you see what he's doing. Yet at the same time, you know, Donald Trump was an anomaly when he ran for the nomination. He was an anomaly as a president, and he's an anomaly as a as an ex-president. And so he is off the chart and has been, you know, ever since he entered the political arena. And so it's not at all surprising that people are wondering what he's going to do and what his plans are. And it's just so difficult to tell. It really is with him. He's really his own person and, you know, marches to his own drum.
He really does. He did show up at the UFC fight the other night, so we know he still likes UFC stuff, so that's good.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, there you go.
Ex-presidents at a UFC card. You can't make that up.
Gary Rose. No, I know.
Chair of the Department of Government at Sacred Heart University. Gary, thank you for the time on your off time. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road.
Oh, sure, Paul. Okay.
Thanks. Right. Bye-bye. There you go. Yeah, boy, I tell you, whether you love Trump or hate him, he's really broken the mold of ex-presidents, huh? Buddy, our pal, he covers commuter issues. He writes the Getting There column for Hearst Connecticut Media. The one and only Jim Cameron. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon. How are you?
Paul, is it hot enough for you?
Well, that's why I always say, Jimbo, air conditioning is a food group to me. That's all. People ask me, Jim, when do you turn off your air conditioning? And I say, turn it off. What do you get? Turn it off. Come on, man.
Crank it up, Paul.
Crank it up. So, Jim, listen, you were pointing out something that popped up on another website that maybe the MTA has not been, I don't know, upfront or clear about what they actually did or did not do with mask enforcement on the trains. Lay this all out for us.
Well, I want to put the politics aside, okay?
Sure.
I mean, whether you think masks are necessary or not, the health authorities seem to feel and have data that proves that the best way to prevent yourself, well, the best way to prevent yourself from getting COVID is to get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then if you still want to wear a mask, good for you. Well, it's not optional when you take mass transit or airplanes or buses. There's now a federal rule enforced by the TSA, those airport guys, that says that if you're on a train or a bus and you cross a state line, you gotta wear a mask. And the MTA has been doing a bang up job of public relations in terms of wear a mask. They've got posters on how to wear a mask, put it over your nose, put it over your mouth, etc. But we've discovered through a Freedom of Information Act request that they have not issued a single citation on Metro North in Connecticut for mask non-wearers. So they're saying one thing, but they're not doing the other. They're not enforcing the rule. Whether it's a $50 ticket or a $100 ticket, you know, they're supposed to have enough masks that if you go to a conductor and you say, hey, I forgot my mask, he's supposed to give you a mask. A 10-cent mask can keep you alive. And you got to wear those things when you're on the train. But if they're not enforcing that rule by issuing tickets to the offenders, I think they're just doing lip service.
All right, Jim, hang on. We'll be right back because there's more to this involving FOI requests and all that. Jim Cameron is with us for one of his regular check-ins. So what's the deal here with Metro North masks? And as Jim said, enforcement of not a local regulation, a federal regulation on interstate rails, airplane trips, and buses. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And what we talk about from time to time to time on a regular basis, commuter issues. He writes the Getting There column for Hearst Connecticut Media, and he's been a commuter advocate for years in this state. The one and only Jim Cameron joins us for a few more minutes. And Jim was pointing earlier this week, a few days ago, on his social media presence to a story that the MTA has not issued one fine to anyone not wearing a mask on the on the Metro North Railroad. And, okay, Jim, you know, I always love to believe the goodness of people. I find it hard to believe that there might not have been one or two people, Jim, not wearing a mask. Maybe I'm being too cynical. Maybe that's just me.
Hey, every single day I get an email or a picture or I see a tweet from a commuter on a train showing a picture of somebody not wearing a mask on the train. Sometimes even the conductors are not wearing the masks properly. So it's really hypocritical of MTA to be saying, here's the rule and here's how to wear a mask, and not be enforcing that. You know, this is, if I got on a train with one of my cigars and I lit it up, boy, I'd be thrown off that train so fast.
Yeah.
Conductors seem to have no trouble keeping my feet off the seat or putting luggage in the overhead. But why can't they at least, you know, call the MTA police and say, look, we got a guy on this train who refuses to wear a mask. What should I do? Meet us at the next station, or let me just drop him off in Bridgeport, even though he's, you know, going all the way to New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that would happen more than once.
Do you think, Jimmy, I was just going to ask you that, is it a sense of fear? And by the way, there's this viral fight, Jim. I don't know whether you saw this. There's a video going around social media of two guys who got into it on a train the other day. Now, there wasn't a conductor involved, I don't think. It was just two guys. One didn't want to wear a mask or wasn't wearing a mask. And these guys are throwing haymakers like a hockey game here. I wonder, Jim, and it's not to throw these people under the bus here. We get that. But I wonder if some of the conductors or some of the personnel are just scared. I don't know.
I think they don't want to do this kind of confrontation. And that's why there is an MTA police department. You know, there are officers that patrol the trains or the train stations. Not many of them up here in Connecticut. But, I mean, I personally have reported trains that were on their way to Grand Central. Here's the train. Here's the time it arrives. It's coming from New Haven. There are dozens of people on this train not wearing masks. Why don't you, you know, have a couple of officers show up. The conductors can point you in the right direction. Write some tickets. Teach these people what the laws are. I'm a law and order guy, okay? This is not a political decision. This is following the law. If you're on an airplane and refuse to wear a mask, you know, there have been fines of thousands of dollars for people not wearing. You know, this is public health. There's a new variant. The Delta variant is going around. And most of the cases that are popping up in Connecticut are people who, A, are unvaccinated, and B, are not wearing masks. That's how they're catching this thing. Kids are not vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, kids on a train are particularly vulnerable.
Jim, I understand there was a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request here involved. What did that have to do with the whole thing here?
Well, I got to give I got to give props to the folks at CT Examiner, which is this hot little online newspaper in Eastern Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
They took my column and ran with it and said, "Why don't we find out what the facts are?" Metro North keeps saying that they're not having no problems with mask compliance. So it took them like 8 weeks. Shouldn't take that long to go to a state agency and say, show us the number of citations. Oh, they wrote citations for all kinds of different stuff, but zero tickets issued for non-mask compliance.
You know, Jim, it's a question of, and you and I have talked about this before, I don't care whether it's a legislature, what they spend money on, what they don't spend money on, what your mayor or first selectman or first select woman does. Jim Cameron, when you lose credibility, that's 90% of the game, man. If you're not credible, Jim, if you don't back up what you threaten to do or say you're going to do just to get people off your back, that ain't good.
Well, and that's what people are finding. They're not wearing masks on the train, and nothing's happening to them. I mean, your listeners right now, I can visualize your listeners sitting in bumper-to-bumper traffic on I-95 and saying, this is why I'm not on the train, you know? I'd rather be in my car. In bumper-to-bumper traffic and not wearing a mask than be sitting on a train with some bozo that doesn't wear a mask and nothing happens to him.
You're right.
Enjoy the ride, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Enjoy the ride.
Thank you, Jim. Enjoy the ride. We appreciate it. Jim Cameron there. Check him out, folks. The regular commuter columnist and advocate. He writes the Getting There features and columns for Hearst Connecticut Media. Jim, stay away from the bozos, my friend. Be good, and we'll talk to you.
Yeah, enjoy the AC.
Oh, love it, baby. Love it. Jim Cameron there.